most people who are transgendered have been there. They read these stories and they, you know, can relate to this or that story, that something happened to them that was similar. But my main objective is to try to reach the broader audience of people who maybe never even met a transgendered person.
We do not want her around your friends. We do not want her around those kind of people.
What kind of people?
Dykes! Queers!
Frank, don't!
Can I make that any clearer for you?
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. A black lesbian dies in a historic U.S. execution, a trans activist answers the questions you didn't know you should ask, and a landmark custody case makes for dramatic viewing. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Chase Schulte.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 13th, 2001. Oklahoma lesbian Wanda Jean Allen was executed by lethal injection this week for the 1988 shooting death of her partner Gloria Leathers. A flurry of last-minute appeals to both Republican Governor Frank Keating and the federal courts failed to win a stay. There is no question that Allen shot Leathers, although her defenders view the killing as an extension of a physical altercation between the couple earlier in the day, the last in a series of violent arguments between them. But the jury in Allen's case never learned of her low IQ and neurological disabilities, and Allen's exaggeration of her academic achievements at her sentencing hearing were repeated by the prosecution at her clemency hearing. There were also a series of protests by opponents of the death penalty, culminating in a demonstration on the eve of the execution by more than 150 people, where the Reverend Jesse Jackson and 27 others were arrested for civil disobedience. Allen had met Leathers while serving time on a manslaughter conviction in the shooting death of her previous partner, Deetra Pettis. One 1998 study found that more than one-third of the women on death row in the U.S. were lesbians, in part because they are viewed as more deviant than other women who kill.
In Canada, Calgary lesbian Deborah Point was sentenced to life imprisonment with no possibility of parole for at least 20 years. Point was convicted of the second-degree murder of her roommate and longtime friend Audrey Trudeau. Point said they had established a sexual relationship, but Trudeau's family continued to deny this. Point and her family continued to deny that she committed the axe murder and dismemberment, but evidence strongly connected Point to the storage of the body parts in a garage where they were only discovered 5 months later. One expert said there had been no case like it in Canada.
Kazuko Fukuda is asking Japan's Supreme Court to reduce her life sentence for the 1982 slaying of her estranged lesbian partner, Atsuko Yasuoka. Fukuda was a fugitive for almost 15 years before her arrest in 1997. She was found guilty of murder without premeditation but committed in the course of a robbery and was sentenced to life imprisonment by the Matsuyama District Court in 1999. The sentence was upheld by the Takamatsu High Court in December.
William Ian Beggs, a gay man with a history of violence towards other gay men, was extradited from the Netherlands to Scotland this week to face charges in the December 1999 murder of 18-year-old Barry Wallace. The killing became known as the Limbs in the Loch case because of the discovery of the first parts of Wallace's dismembered body in Loch Lomond. It took a month to find the rest. Beggs was the subject of one of the largest manhunts in Scottish history, but he had already fled to the Netherlands, where he turned himself into authorities and used every possible appeal against extradition. He's believed to be appealing to the European Court of Human Rights as well, claiming he cannot get a fair hearing in Scotland because of media coverage there. He's expected to face trial there within 12 months.
Gay London police officers have been the subject of a homophobic hate campaign. Scotland Yard began to investigate the situation after 8 officers at the West End Central Station received threatening letters this week. Previous incidents have included vandalism of an officer's car while it was parked in a secure police lot and bottles of gasoline sent to gay officers' homes with instructions to set themselves on fire. Internal inquiries by the Metropolitan Police found no evidence that other police officers were responsible.
Bills to increase sentences for crimes motivated by homophobia are being introduced as U.S. state legislatures open their sessions. A new hate crimes bill has been introduced in Texas, where in 1999, incoming President George W. Bush's candidacy led state senators to kill a similar measure, which was highly controversial primarily for its inclusion of anti-gay crimes. Texas' current hate crimes law has proven impossible to prosecute successfully and may well be unconstitutional. Sponsors are hopeful that this year's bill will pass both houses and that new Republican Governor Rick Perry will let it become law. North Carolina will see a renewed effort to pass the so-called Matthew Shepard Memorial Act, which may add gender expression as well as sexual orientation as victim categories for sentencing enhancements. A bill will also be introduced to reform the state's Crimes Against Nature law. In Mississippi, House Bill 162 has also been introduced to add homophobic crimes to the state's hate crimes law. But in Arizona, a bill has been introduced to stop counties, cities, and school boards from withholding benefits from the Boy Scouts of America because of BSA's policies excluding gays, atheists, and agnostics.
Reform Jewish congregations in North America have been urged to stop sponsoring Boy Scout troops and Cub Scout packs because of BSA's policy of discrimination against gays. A non-binding memo was issued last week by the Joint Commission on Social Action of the Union of American Hebrew Congregations and the Central Conference of American Rabbis, the leading groups of laypeople and clergy in the Reform sect. The memo said, "If a congregation that sponsors or houses a Boy Scout troop and or Cub Scout pack shares our conclusion that working from within the Boy Scouts of America is no longer a viable or productive option, it may wish to sever those ties as incompatible with our consistent belief that every individual, regardless of his or her sexual orientation, is created in the image of God and is deserving of equal treatment." Parents were also urged either to pull their children out of scouting or to undertake one of a number of protest actions. The memo is being hailed as the strongest action any religious group has yet taken against BSA's discriminatory policy.
Other religious activists last week protested what they called spiritual violence against gays and lesbians by the Vatican. Members of the gay and lesbian Catholic group Dignity USA and the interfaith group Soul Force spent 3 days demonstrating behind a police barrier dividing the city of Rome from the Vatican. Then they tried to enter St. Peter's Square itself, where no protest action has been allowed for decades. First, two demonstrators were removed from the square during the Pope's ceremony closing the Jubilee year and detained until the ceremony was completed. But later, surrounded by police, the rest were allowed to remain there for 3 hours, singing, praying, and celebrating communion. Corresponding demonstrations were held at Roman Catholic cathedrals and churches in several U.S. cities.
A Texas church with a mission to spread God's word to the gay and lesbian community has not only given its new minister a job, it's given him back the life, he says, he lost to amnesia after a beating 16 years ago. When John Simmons last month delivered an audition sermon to Garland's White Rock Community Church, he described how he had awakened from a coma in Tennessee in July 1984 without recollection of his prior life. He described how he had built a new life and gone on to spend the last 10 years at the Golden Gate Baptist Theological Seminary in Mill Valley, California, earning 2 master's degrees and working as Dean of Student Life. When the service was over, a member of the White Rock congregation told Simmons that he believed he was actually Barry Cox, a Church of Christ minister in San Antonio who had disappeared in July 1984 and been declared legally dead. The congregant had worked with Cox at a church camp in New Mexico in 1982. The congregant arranged for Simmons to meet first with friends of Cox's parents and then with Cox's mother and siblings, all of whom agree that Simmons is Cox. Cox's wife, who had dissolved their marriage after his disappearance, has not yet met with Simmons, but has identified him as Cox from his photos, handwriting, and voice on the telephone. Simmons does not remember the Cox family members, but had some scraps of memories of facts about their home. The White Rock member who recognized Simmons as Cox said, "I don't know if I'd necessarily call it a miracle, but it's definitely something God had a hand in."
The president of Indiana's Purdue University announced this week that he will officially add sexual orientation to the school's non-discrimination policy. Purdue is the last of the Big Ten universities to take the step, which campus activists have lobbied for over the last decade. While the school's gays and lesbians celebrated the announcement, University President Martin Jischke downplayed it as a clarification, saying it was an error to believe that a group's omission from the policy meant that discrimination against them would be condoned.
And finally, another school, Australia's prestigious National Institute of Dramatic Art, has accepted openly gay former professional rugby star Ian Roberts. Only 25 other students were accepted out of more than 1,300 applications to the alma mater of Mel Gibson and Cate Blanchett. The notoriously tough rugby forward said that acting had shown him that "I'm not as brave as I thought. Getting up in front of people and exposing your emotions is very, very hard." Roberts decided on an acting career about a year ago and had spent the last 6 months in intensive study. He also has a bit part in the upcoming film Star Wars Episode II. Roberts mentioned another qualification for his admission to NIDA, saying, "I acted straight for 25 years.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 13th, 2001. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Chase Schulte.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
To understand what makes a family, it takes a lifetime, the network that is, and you'll get a preview of the new made-for-cable movie on that subject later in the program. George Wilkerson is a married father and grandfather who works as a technical editor for a major global corporation. He's also transgender activist Bobby Williams. Both George's and Bobby's names appear as authors of the new book, Me and Bobby and the Girls, a collection of articles and short stories that brings the trans experience to life. This Way Out's Sean McLaughlin spoke with Bobby to find out why and how the book came to be.
Tell me about your book.
Well, it's a collection of things I've written over the past 3 years. Actually, there's two types of things, if you will. One is articles, columns that I wrote for Transgender Forum, which is an online magazine. It's the largest online magazine for the transgender community. And the second portion of it contains short stories with transgender themes. And these are all collected around that title. The first bunch of things, those articles, are conversations between my male self and my female self as we prepare to go out for the evening or talking to friends that we have in the community. Most of this was written when I lived in Austin, Texas.
And now that you're up here in the capital region of New York, how are things different? How has the community responded to your book? Are things the same or different?
The response generally has been pretty good because it's, you know, published nationally. It's not just local. So I, in fact, just got a call from a friend in Dallas who bought it and said she really liked it. But it's cold. It's colder here than it is in Austin, Texas, I'll say that.
And that's for sure.
I had to buy a whole second wardrobe. I told my friend to come up to New York from Texas. And if you're a cross-dresser, you don't have to just buy one new wardrobe. You have to buy two.
That's absolutely true. And tell me about the audience for Me and Bobby and the Girls. You say that this is a collection of pieces regarding the transgendered experience, but it's not necessarily for the transgendered community. What do you mean by that?
I mean by that most people who are transgendered have been there. They read these stories, and I've had a lot of email from people who tell me that they, you know, can relate to this or that story, that something happened to them that was similar. But my main objective is to try to reach the broader audience of people who maybe never even met a transgendered person, or if they did, just thought it was some kind of a joke, or just were ignorant of the fact that we're people like everybody else, and that we lead lives that are very similar for the most part. And the fact is that there are many, many people who are transgendered out there in the world. As I've told friends of mine that I came out to, I'm just the tip of the iceberg. People like me who go out in public, for every one of us, there's 100, 200 more who never go outside their homes, who never even reveal themselves to family or friends or anybody else. And in, I guess it's, I want to say T.S. Eliot, who said they lead lives of quiet desperation.
What are some of the other issues that the book addresses?
Well, a lot of the it has to do with issues about being transgendered, and these days that's cuts across a broad spectrum. One of the pieces talks about sexuality, which people confuse with gender. Many transgendered people are straight, quote unquote. Many are bisexual, and of course many are gay, but the one does not equate to the other. So that you can't assume that because any more than you can assume that if a man is gay that he likes to wear dresses, you can't assume that if a man likes to wear dresses, he's gay. And that's one of the things that I think people need to understand and recognize. There are other issues, too, involving just having to live day to day with the whole matter of not falling into the rigid kind of categories that people want to classify others as, and one of those is gender. You have to be either male or female. You can't be somewhere in between the two because people just have a hard time dealing with that.
Now that Me and Bobby and the Girls has been published, what are you working on now? Are you working on another piece of writing?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've got a novel I'm doing, which is titled Transfixed. And it's basically a detective story. And my detective is investigating the murder of a transgendered person, much like the one of those I described in one of my short stories, who was out as far as going out to meet other transgendered people. But this individual's co-workers and friends weren't aware of the fact that he was transgendered. The only person that knew was his wife, and she didn't tell the police that when they investigated his killing. He was, murdered, and she had promised him that she would never reveal this about him, so she gets a friend who's a detective to investigate, and he, of course, winds up going into the transgender community to find out about it, and he learns a lot.
Bobby, congratulations on being published, and we wish you the best in the future.
Thank you.
How can people get in touch with you if they'd like to learn more?
Well, you can send all your hate mail to Bobby Williams, that's B-O-B-B-I Williams, at tgforum.com, I'll reply.
Okay, Bobby Williams, thank you for joining us. Me and Bobby and the Girls is published by Ex Libris Publishing. In Troy, New York, I'm Sean McLaughlin for This Way Out.
Me and Bobby and the Girls is available at your favorite online book superstore.
Hi, this is Terrence Stamp, Bernadette in The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, on This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio News Magazine.
What makes a family? That's exactly the question posed by a new film debuting on the Lifetime U.S. cable channel on January 22nd. Starring Brooke Shields, Cherry Jones, and Anne Mira, What Makes a Family is based on the moving true story of a landmark Florida custody case. This Way Out's Steve Pride caught up with one of the film's executive producers to find out more about it.
Craig Zaden and Neil Marin of Storyline Entertainment have single-handedly reinvented the American musical for television. Combine these guys with co-executive producer Barbara Streisand, toss in a cast that includes Oscar-winning Whoopi Goldberg, Brooke Shields, Anne Mara, and Tony Award-winning out lesbian Cherry Jones, and you'd no doubt think you have a blockbuster on NBC, CBS, or ABC. But no, we're talking about an original film premiering on the Lifetime cable network. It's called What Makes a Family.
Hi, my name is Neil Marin, and I'm one of the executive producers of What Makes a Family. The plot of What Makes a Family is based on a true story that took place in Florida, and it was a landmark court case. And the movie is about Janine and her relationship with Sandy. Janine is basically a very, very shy and unacknowledged lesbian who is not very, very comfortable in her skin. And Sandy, who becomes her girlfriend, is very much comfortable in her skin and falls in love with Janine basically at first sight and helps her acknowledge who she is. And at that point, she suggests that they start a family.
Janine, let's have a baby.
No.
Why not? You love kids probably more than I do. And how can you eat that garbage?
You don't like it? You cook. You just have a block about cooking. Any idiot can make a pasta sauce.
Idiot's a good word. Well, you hold a baby for a minute and now you want one?
Now, you know me better than that. I've been thinking about it for a while. We would be such great parents, Neen.
Sandy, please, get a cat. Get a dog, a bird. A nice pet will satisfy whatever this urge is you've got.
I train dogs all day for a living. I can assure you I do not want a pet. I want a child. Our child.
Sandy gets artificially inseminated. She gives birth to a beautiful girl. They raise the girl together very lovingly, and these are two fantastic partners in a wonderful family that you would want to be a part of, that anybody would want to be a part of, until Sandy develops lupus, which is a very life-threatening disease, and unfortunately she has it really bad. Janine does everything she can to support Sandy in her illness and to keep the family going. She gets together with Sandy's family, and eventually the worst thing does happen and Sandy passes away. And Janine thinks that she's going to be able to just continue the life raising her daughter, Heather. Much to her surprise, Sandy's once loving family turns against her and takes Heather away.
She is not your daughter. She is Sandy's daughter, and she's all we have.
I am not keeping her from you.
Oh, the hell you're not. You don't even return our calls.
I can't return anyone's calls. I'm trying to adjust. We're just trying to get through this.
We? We who? Huh? Who else you got over there in that house?
What?
We do not want her around your friends. We do not want her around those kind of people.
What kind of people?
Dykes! Queers!
Frank, don't...
Can I make that any clearer for you?
Your daughter was those kind of people.
Yeah, thanks to you.
She told you what she was in high school.
What she was in high school. What she was confused. She didn't know what she wanted. You messed up her life. And I do not want you messing up Heather's life.
We were attracted to the story because when you go through all these stories about lesbian and gay adoptions, they usually end sadly. And here in the state of Florida, where you would think that it would be impossible, Florida is the only state in the country which bans gays and lesbians from adopting. Janine does win custody of her daughter, so it's a story that gives hope. And it's an extraordinary cast of women: Brooke Shields, Cherry Jones, Ann Mira, and Whoopi Goldberg. I mean, you couldn't ask for a more diverse, talented group of women than what we've assembled in this film. Cherry Jones has never played a lesbian role before, and when we approached her, she read the script and jumped on board immediately. She was our first choice to play that part. She is a goddess in terms of the theater. She's a goddess in terms of acting. And as good of an actress as she is, she's that good of a person as well. Brooke Shields came to the project, actually. We were trying to decide on who should be in this movie. And we didn't even think about Brooke until I read her cover story interview in The Advocate. And when I read that, I was actually struck at how much depth she has as a human being and how much feeling she had for the gay and lesbian community. And I thought, if she has this much depth and understanding of the gay experience, she would be able to bring this with her as an actress to play this part.
Neil Marin, with producing partner Craig Zaden, runs Storyline Entertainment, the company behind the recent TV versions of Annie, Gypsy, and Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella. They also produced the NBC movie Serving in Silence, the Margaret Kammermeier story.
We've been producing together for at least 10 years, and we've been doing the type of projects that you can sleep well at night knowing that we were able to do what our dreams have been, such as bringing musicals back to TV, doing issue-oriented projects about gays and lesbians, as well as biopics of some of the people that we've admired, such as the Beach Boys, the Three Stooges, up into our current work, which is a miniseries about Judy Garland, which will air at the end of February, starring another acting goddess, Judy Davis.
That project will air on ABC. So what about the Lifetime Television Network?
Lifetime is a very, very interesting company because they're not afraid to tackle issues. As a matter of fact, they welcome issues. One of our next movies for Lifetime is going to be about Dana Rivers, who is a transsexual, and they welcome the challenge of doing issues. Their audience wants to see this. It brings them, I think, a great deal of satisfaction to know that they may be able to affect change.
What Makes a Family premieres Monday, January 22nd at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Times on the Lifetime Television Network. This has been a conversation with one of the film's executive producers, Neil Maron. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
She used to be so lonely. Used to hate herself. She ran away from feelings, or just put them on a shelf. But that was long ago, before she knew to love a woman is holy too. And now she knows. Judged her wrong, they can go to hell. He used to try to listen to voices that would say, you should not be different, especially that way. But that was long ago.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Chase Schulte, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Brian Nunes, Rex Walkner, Sean McLaughlin, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Melanie B. sang Different Ones, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and the CPSS Guadalupe Fund, by Planet Out, from designated contributions by Uncommon Clout Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For audio cassette information or with any questions or comments about This Way Out, please email us at tworadio@aol.com. Visit our webpage at thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. And please be sure to include the call letters of this station. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. For Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening on WHRW Binghamton, New York, KRCL Salt Lake City, Utah, 2BOB Taree, New South Wales, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Y'all stay tuned.